items 284 and 285.
Item 284, amend the transportation system plan consistent with the 2035 comprehensive plan and in compliance with the regional transportation plan. Amend River District Master Street Plan. Add proposals for automated vehicles. Adopt findings of compliance. Adopt corrections. Amend transportation and parking demand management code to clarify requirements. And 285, amend the transportation system plan to update introduction, modal plans, implementation strategies, and glossary.
Very good. Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to introduce the hearing for the third and final stage of the update to Portland's 2035 Transportation System Plan, or TSP. The TSP is the 20-year guide for how we maintain and expand our transportation system to accommodate future growth. This update comes at a particularly important time as our population is growing and we continue to experience strong job growth. With new people and new economic activity, there comes increasing demands on our transportation system. At the same time, we are seeing new technologies and new mobility options, which offer new opportunities as well as new challenges. All of this highlights the need for the city policies and strategies to guide our transportation decisions both today and in the years to come. Transportation touches so many aspects of our city, and the development of the TSP reflects this. With input from community members and business groups, and coordination with bureaus like Fire and Parks and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the TSP has been comprehensively developed to be a guiding document for our city. And I'd now like to introduce Courtney Duke with PBOT to provide us with an overview of the third stage of the Transportation System Plan. She'll be joined by some others.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Courtney Duke from the Bureau of Transportation. I've been the project manager and lead of the Transportation System Plan and the City's Comprehensive Plan for Transportation for the last 8 to 10 years, depending upon where you want to measure that. I'm here with Bob Kellett, a planner in our group, and Peter Hurley, another planner, to go through where we are right now for the Stage 3 TSP. So Bob's going to run the presentation, which should be up. Oh, there it is. Okay. So again, we also wanted to introduce the most of the TSP team is here, those of us still working with us. They're here to answer questions, but also to be recognized as working quite hard on this project as well, because we do think that this might be one of the last times we see you related to the TSP this round. So, the TSP is a part of a larger transportation and land use plan process that goes all the way up to the state. I know that three of you have been here for the duration of our comp plan and TSP update, but we have two new commissioners, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Udaly. So we thought we'd do a little bit of background to make sure that we know where we all are. So again, our first slide just sort of gives an idea of how we fit in to the statewide planning goals. The transportation planning rule, which was a direction from the state to help implement those goals. We have a regional transportation plan that is actually underway right now, and actually both of the people here at the table with me are working on that as well. And then again, we're a part of the comprehensive plan. There are also components, and most of what you're going to see today are components that are outside of that comprehensive plan component, but we also have some changes to that, and then we have some things that we just need to update to have one cohesive document. So components of the transportation system plan, you can see on this slide, pretty big document. Right now it's in about four big binders, but again, we have some staff here later that are going to give some previews of how that's going to be streamlined into a more web document. So we'll go to the next slide to talk about where we have come to you before. So stage one of the TSP was a part of the comprehensive plan update that you saw as a part of the city's periodic review order that came down from the state. There were a number of tasks that were required by us, and we worked closely with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Eric Engstrom, who's also here. So what's highlighted were the things that were adopted by City Council in June of 2016. So those were the main goals and policies for transportation, which is Chapter 9. But there's also goals and policies related to transportation and the right-of-way in Chapters 2, which is the public involvement chapter, Chapter 3, 4, 8, and then, of course, Chapter 9 is the main component, but we have sections throughout. We also had the transportation major projects and programs, and then we had a project evaluation to get to that, and then a financial plan to help pay for all of that. And those, again, were required as a part of the state periodic review and were adopted by council in 2016, and I believe have just been upheld by the state, even though parts of it were appealed, but we were happy to say that no transportation-related things were appealed. And then we had stage two, which is in the orangish color on your screen, I hope. So then we did some updates related to the introduction because it was a fairly static document at that time, and the glossary, again, to be in compliance with the updated comprehensive plan. We made some changes to our community involvement chapter and to the bicycle objectives to be in alignment with the bicycle plan that had been adopted in 2010. And we made some adjustments to our street classification policies. There's seven policies related to street classifications, and we updated the bicycle ones to be in compliance with the plan, as well as our street design classifications. And this was in direct response to changes to the comprehensive plan related to the centers and corridor strategy. We also updated our refinement plans and studies chapter because we had done a lot of those plans and studies. And then we also had some updates to our master street plans. And we made some changes to the street vacation code and have added that to the code as a part of that. We made some changes to transportation demand management and some commercial parking in the codes. Again, those were adopted in December of 16 and are at the state and have been approved at the state level. So now we are in stage three, our final stage, which is in green. So we're making some additional changes to the introduction and glossary. Just since the last couple years, there's been a few terms that we wanted to make sure that were included. We have actually deleted the objectives, and Bob's going to talk a little bit about this more when he talks, to be in compliance with the comprehensive plan and the 2035 Central City Plan. We made changes to street classifications for transit, emergency response, and traffic. We needed to do a minor update to the River District. We have a reference to our modal and management plans. We have some implementation strategies, especially related to codes and standards. And then we made some policy changes related to automotive vehicles and our performance measures, partly in relation to some direction from Planning Commission. So then we also, as a part of all that, obviously had public participation. The discussion draft, we had a discussion and proposed draft, as we've done for all of our components. We had, as you can see, over 120 comments and outreached over 30 events. And we heard some from our West Hills citizens, as well as some folks in Southeast, and we made some changes in the document related to that, which we'll talk about. And then the proposed draft came out, and we had sent out additional public involvement and had comments around that as well as Planning Commission testimony. All right. So today's council actions are an ordinance to update the comprehensive plan components. So those are the geographic policies, again, the objectives, street classifications, performance measures, the connected and automated vehicles, master street plan, some code chapter changes, some errata, which were basically some typos. And then we have a resolution related to the introduction, the modal plans, the glossary, and implementation strategies. And then now Bob and Peter will go through a little more detail on those sections.
Thank you, Courtney. So as Courtney mentioned, a lot of what we've done has been working in conjunction with the comprehensive plan. So back in our current TSP that was written in 2007, we had a geographic policy that was based on the seven districts. As you may know, with the comprehensive plan, they've adopted a five pattern area. So we've taken our geographic policies and made those into the pattern areas. With the objectives in the 2007 TSP, we had goals, policies, and underneath those were objectives. to maintain consistency with the Comprehensive Plan and Central City 2035, which do not have objectives. We went through all the objectives. Some of them we achieved, and so we were able to delete those. Some were elevated to sub-policies, and then some we identified as being more of an implementation strategy, so we moved those to our implementation section. As Courtney mentioned, this stage three, we've updated some of our street classifications. These provide policy guidance for the desired function of the street, so how we want the street to function. In this stage, we've updated the traffic, transit, and emergency response street classifications. In the stage two, we did the bicycle and street design. And coming to you in the future will be our pedestrian classifications. That's right now part of the PED PDX master plan that is being updated, as well as potentially a freight master plan update sometime in the near future. So the street classifications, we've made some changes to emphasize our policies around Vision Zero to make sure that we have safety goals as our top priority. We've also clarified that some of the traffic calming tools that we can use, we've used on local streets, and now we can use as on neighborhood collectors, things like speed bumps. With the transit, we worked closely with TriMet. As you may know, TriMet does a service enhancement planning where they're projecting out future transit service, and so we worked closely with them to update our transit street classifications, as well as emphasize not only the lines that will be serving us in the future, but also access to transit. We know how important it is for people to be able to get safely to their bus stops. And also, once they're on the bus, we have some policies related to priority treatments along those transit lines so that transit can move quicker where it needs to go. We worked closely with the Fire and Rescue Bureau on the emergency response street classifications. One of the big changes we've made is add a secondary response classification. So this is important when a primary response route is blocked for whatever reason, traffic, or it's closed for construction. The secondary emergency routes allow the fire and rescue to get where they're going. It also, we've worked closely with them to identify ways in which we can have both our priorities of quick response, but also traffic calming. So we've worked with the Fire Bureau to develop fire-friendly speed bumps and things like that. We have worked closely with Prosper Portland on the post office site. So we've added a little bit of connectivity to the River District Master Street Plan to facilitate that redevelopment in the future. And as Courtney mentioned, we continue to make some updates to what we're calling the supporting sections, the introduction, the glossary. The modal master plans is a reference to the master plans that we have adopted, the bike master plan, pedestrian plan, and the implementation strategies. We did make one recommended change to Code Chapter 17.107. As part of Stage 2, Council adopted this in the commercial mixed-use zones. For the transportation parking demand management. So we're just clarifying within the code that the fees that will be charged are going to be part of an annual fee. This allows us also to look at ways in which we can have one rate for market rate dwellings and one for affordable rate. With TriMet adopting a new low-income fare, this might provide an opportunity to achieve both our transit goals and also our affordable housing goals. And now Peter will talk about performance measures.
Good afternoon, Council members. Peter Hurley, Portland Bureau of Transportation. Section 7 of the document covers performance measures. Transportation system plans are required to have performance measures, and measures in our plan are the North Star for what we want to achieve on safety, on equity, on climate, and on congestion. PBOT, along with the Planning and Sustainability Commission, are recommending performance measures that will require strong actions to achieve. Achieving those measures will be a significant stretch. Council adopted several measures in December 2016. The changes before you today are refinements that emphasize a 70% non-single occupant vehicle mode share for all trips and for commute trips. We also make explicit a 30% or less target for commute trips and establish a new work-at-home target of 10%. We're also suggesting adding a new congestion target of not increasing the total number of non-freight trips, which is particularly important for addressing congestion.
May I please ask a question about this? So is the 10% work at home target, is that for the city of Portland, capital city of Portland, or is that for all of the city of Portland?
Very good question. It is for all employers in the city of Portland, so it would include private sector as well as public sector.
Okay, so when you say performance measure, because obviously you don't drive that decision. I mean, there's employment policies and everything else. And you say this is a performance measure. Is it a performance measure for PBOT or a performance measure for the program? Whose performance measure is this?
We're saying, and as part of a transportation system plan, the region and the state say set performance targets so that we can manage the system as a whole. We're establishing that as a city target in order to effectively manage the system as a whole. We do have some tools to work with both public sector and private sector employers, incentive programs, even improving transit, improving bicycle and pedestrian connections helps people to make that choice. And as Bob just mentioned, we do have a transportation demand management program as well, where we work with both developers and employers to encourage people to use alternative modes, including working at home.
And I'm sorry, what is the current percentage?
It's just over 7%.
It's so over 7%.
That one is not a huge stretch to get up to 10%.
No, it doesn't seem like it would be. And with, you know, our age-friendly city desires, obviously we're trying to be more flexible in the workday and how people do work, and that could have obviously encouraged some older adults to stay engaged in the workforce as well. So that just caught my attention, and I appreciate your clarification.
You bet.
Commissioner Fritz?
Well, I think there's certainly an opportunity for us as a city employing 6,000 people. Obviously, the parks technicians need to be in the parks, but some of the staff could work from home one or two days a week, and that's something we can do by leadership. I also am kind of concerned that we're not proposing to improve our walking, bicycle, or transit percentages, and why is that?
So the percentages that were established by the council in December 2016, such as 25% for transit and 25% for bicycling, are very aggressive measures and will require a significant set of both policy and investment decisions in order to achieve those. The current projections are less than that we would not achieve those without significant policy changes and investment changes.
But we're going to keep them the same in stage two and stage three just to keep reaching for the top? Is that
One of the things, we had some conversation at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and Commissioner Smith can perhaps speak to this, but certainly what the message that we heard and the message that we wanted to send is that we believe that establishing realistically aggressive targets or significant stretch targets sends the appropriate message, given the adoptions that we have for Vision Zero, for our climate action plan, for our equity standards within the city, helping people to make it easier for them to travel affordably, to travel using transit, walking, and bicycling. It's appropriate to have those significant measures. And it does, in many ways, if actions follow words, we'll be bringing to you a series of decisions that could up those percentages, but will be significant decisions.
Okay, thank you.
What is the, how do you define the 10% or the 12.5% of carpool? Is that of trips that are taken as part of a carpool? Or 12.5% of what?
So that if there were 100 commute trips that were taken by individuals within the city, 12.5 of the total number of individuals would have chosen carpooling. So 25 out of 200, et cetera. And carpooling, there's the traditional carpooling, which is individuals choosing to share a ride to get to work. But it can also include the new technologies, so a shared TNC trip, a shared Uber Lyft trip, for example, could count as a carpool. Not if it's just the driver and one passenger. It would require two or more passengers as well. And one of the reasons that even though carpooling has been stagnant or declining over the last several years because of the increase in access to transportation network company trips, Uber, Lyft, and others, we are seeing a significant increase in people using those options. And we would like to see more of those in the future shared, and those would count as carpool trips.
Great. Thank you. I mean, that seems like one of the obvious solutions to reducing congestion that costs a lot less than infrastructure.
As we move into the automated and connected vehicle policy, one of the things that we are recommending along with the Planning and Sustainability Commission is that we take actions to advance shared trips. If we have a lot of zero-occupant and single-occupant trips, we are not going to achieve our targets.
Can I ask a question? Because you mentioned TNCs, and they're not part of this. So if we have TNCs operating without a cap, and in my neighborhood, the streets are absolutely clogged with TNCs, how do we actually make progress on our goals here if we're not somehow cross-referencing the impact that they are having on congestion?
And Commissioner, if you will, the next section is actually the automated and connected vehicle policy. And I believe as I go through that, I can speak specifically to your question.
Okay.
When you talked to me yesterday, you pointed out that you count those in single occupancy vehicles.
Yes, and zero occupancy vehicles, and if they are not shared. So the next section, Section 8 of the TSP, establishes a new connected and automated vehicle policy. It's important to recognize we currently do not have one, and therefore one of the reasons that we're proposing one is to get ahead of the changes which are occurring. On Monday, a pedestrian crossing a road was killed by an Uber self-driving vehicle in Tempe, Arizona. That death reinforces the need for Portland to adopt a strong connected and automated vehicle policy with a clear priority on Vision Zero.
Could I ask you a question about that? Because that obviously got global press. There was actually a driver behind the wheel, was there not?
Yes, that's the reporting that I've read.
And they didn't stop either. So what else do we know about that? That's 3 days old now.
So I've read a number of reports. I'm probably not the best person to be commenting on it, but I think a question in my mind, and perhaps in yours as well, is would it have made any difference?
That's my question.
If it were a driverless vehicle. We do know that there are nearly 40,000 people killed a year in the United States.
Right, but to be clear, it was not a driverless vehicle. It was reported as being a driverless vehicle.
It was being driven.
It was an automated vehicle with a driver in the seat.
Behind the wheel.
Correct.
Perhaps not paying as much attention as he should have been.
Well, and that's part of the question.
Yes. And so one of the things that because we are prioritizing Vision Zero as part of the automated and connected vehicle policy, and because we are prioritizing a phased approach, going for testing first before deployment, one of the big questions that we have is how to assure a safe level of operation in the city. Obviously, the existing conditions are fairly dangerous, particularly for vulnerable road users because of the high level of death and injury that we currently experience. As we move to a new technology, set of technologies, we're going to make certain that those are safe for the full range.
So haven't we,
users.
I mean, I think we're once again at risk of putting the cart before the horse. Because when you say that, it sort of sounds like, well, we're going to test to see whether drag racing up Burnside makes sense in NASCAR vehicles. I think we first have to ask whether we want NASCAR vehicles on our streets. So I've raised this a dozen times every time we have this conversation. And what I don't want us to do is back into a policy without the council saying that we're going to green light the policy. And the council has not yet taken a position on connected and automated vehicles. And you're already talking about testing. So what have I missed?
So as part of the Smart Automated Vehicles Initiative, we have been prioritizing a very slow step-by-step approach that involves, because there are already, at this point in time, there are no rules that the city of Portland has that would prevent an automated vehicle company from coming in and operating on our streets. By putting in place a strong policy that says, here is how we would like the technology, here is how you would need to operate within the city of Portland, starting with a testing approach, we're getting ahead of the technology and preventing the type of problems we could have if we didn't have.
But why don't we just adopt an interim policy that says that we prohibit this activity and then we figure out the rules? Right. Why are we backing into this?
I couldn't help but jump in. So Art Pierce, I manage transportation planning here for the Bureau. What we're having a discussion of today, specifically what you're talking about, is the recommendations for policy 9.6, which is articulating how autonomous vehicles will fit into our modal hierarchy, not authorizing their function in the street. So what you're specifically talking about, and we're emphasizing very specifically, if I go to the next slide, is when we are considering the inclusion of autonomous vehicles, how do we prioritize their inclusion versus other modes? So we're explicitly saying that walking and biking in transit are more prioritized than the inclusion of the autonomous vehicles. And that is very explicitly trying to address the importance of people-first modes and those modes that address our overall mobility and health strategies as the place to begin the conversation.
Yep. Well, that's helpful for me, Art. But again, and I'm agnostic on the outcome. What I'm simply saying is the council can't start adopting policies without first making a choice and making an informed choice at the front end. And what we're at risk of doing is piecemeal putting in place a regulatory structure that sort of says, well, this is inevitable, versus the threshold conversation about, A, do we want this to occur in our city? B, under what rules? C, what are we going to prioritize in terms of funding? Because this comes with a big price tag in terms of building out a grid that we have to maintain and could come at the expense of other transportation investments. And I just want to be sure that we don't sort of piecemeal get into a position where we say, oh, you know, the train's left the station, we've got all this in works. Because I think council first has to tackle the threshold question.
Sure, and I don't believe that what's in front of you today is that is the train leaving the station. It is instead trying to place where autonomous vehicles will fit into our overall transportation strategy.
Okay.
We do have the Smart Autonomous Vehicle Initiative that did come before council where you gave us direction to not authorize the operation of autonomous vehicles before coming back to council. And so that's very explicit direction. That is not changed.
That's very helpful.
Yeah, so this is really trying to make sure, and I think we will be one of the first cities, if not the first city in the country, to place autonomous vehicles within the overall transportation strategy for a city. So this is actually, we think this is actually very aggressive policy-first perspective.
Commissioner Fritz?
So are you asking us today to accept the policies in Section 8 on connected and autonomous vehicles?
Correct.
Automated vehicles,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you get to the end of your presentation, I have a couple of amendments.
We knew you would, yes.
Thank you.
So I have one more question. I'll just put it on the table.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to this. This is hearsay and speculation.
Right.
I'm told that some Teslas already have the capacity to drive down the street with the driver behind the wheel, but they already have the capacity to do what the car in Phoenix was doing. Am I wrong?
Not quite what the car in Phoenix can do.
Okay.
So they have the ability for some level of disengagement from the driver. The vehicle in Phoenix was actually doing its entire trip in an automated mode.
Got it. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep.
I vaguely remember a Tesla going under a truck.
Yeah,
under similar.
There was a previous fatality that was a Tesla driver, I think, thinking more of what their vehicle could do than it was capable of. Yeah.
Right. Reading a magazine or something.
I think so.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay,
or taking
thanks.
A nap or something. Yeah.
And as we move to the connected and automated vehicle policy, one, I think the concerns that you've expressed are ones that we share, and it's a primary reason that we are putting forward a policy at this point in time is we want to have a strong basis that council feels comfortable with saying that you're prioritizing Vision Zero and other components so that we are prepared. On Monday, as I mentioned, Portland's policy and our Smart Automated Vehicle Initiative both strongly mandate a phased approach, starting with testing in controlled environments such as Portland International Raceway. We're also concerned that without strong standards, we could experience more congestion from zero-occupant AV trips. That's why the policy and SAVI prioritize fleet automated vehicles that are electric, shared, and shared, also known as FAVES, the acronym Fleet Automated Vehicles That Are Electric and Shared, which gets at the question you had previously asked, Commissioner, about congestion and the potential for congestion. one of the policy components here is to say that we are prioritizing or giving direction to the city to prioritize fleet automated vehicles that are electric and shared. We believe that could reduce parking demand and parking impacts, as well as to decrease the number of vehicles and therefore congestion.
By the way, do you happen to know whether any insurance companies are underwriting policies for automated vehicles?
So insurance is one of the areas that we that the state task force that was established in by a bill that was just passed in the legislature is going to be looking into. I don't know whether the current vehicles on the road are self-insured by the companies that are testing them or are independently insured.
Okay, thank you.
And then finally, in the last slide, as Art alluded to a moment ago, the policy includes an update to the people moving strategy adopted by the council in December 2016. We feel that this is particularly important because while we're maintaining walking, bicycling, and transit as the top priorities, we're also saying that amongst the vehicle, the passenger carrying vehicle options, that fleet automated vehicles that are electric and shared are a top priority for affordability, for congestion, and for our climate goals, the electric component. So we're proposing to amend, we along with the Planning and Sustainability Commission, to amend the people moving strategy to reflect that prioritization. That's all that I have on connected and automated vehicles.
Okay. Should I introduce my amendments now? Or wait?
I think I'd wait. Is that okay? All right. Thanks. Okay. So Bob and Peter are going to step back until there's more questions. And we're going to bring up Nicholas Wise, who's a consultant with us, and Kevin Donahue. I'm going to move over so you guys can get there. And Kevin Donahue is an associate planner with us. They are working together on a digital document for us, and also we'll be having a written document with everything included. So we want to just give a quick preview to show you what it will look like and some of the components. This is very much supposed to be a public-facing document and make it much easier for people to use. As I mentioned before, at least the one on my desk is four notebooks full of printed documentation, and so many of our folks aren't doing that anymore. So anyway, so Nicholas is here from Nicholas Wise and Kevin Donahue.
Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Like Courtney said, my name is Nicholas Wise. I'm a consultant with the Portland Bureau of Transportation from my own independent practice called Department. This is the digital web document of the Portland System Transportation Plan, Transportation System Plan. Our main focus with this project was to make it more egalitarian and more open and accessible to the broader public, both private citizens who are concerned about the street construction in their neighborhood, or you know, bicyclist advocates, or even you know, specialist interests like developer groups who need to have a clear understanding of what the city's policy is to do things.
Oh, you're good.
So this is that gigantic document that exists on a desk, but just on the internet. And this gives us a lot of things that we can do, which includes disseminating the document as downloads, as well as creating a easily searchable index of the entire document. So we can do a thing like search for... live demos are always a joy and a pleasure. The entire document is searchable, so we can find results throughout the entire document that are apropos to interests. And then the other thing about the document is it is tying the textual adopted plan to all of the GIS data in the city. And we think this is really important because it makes it more accessible for people who are saying, yes, I can read about all these plans, I know what they mean, but what's happening on my street, what's happening around the corner? So here we're going to zoom into DECOM, and we have all of the transportation system projects and programs, which Kevin can talk a little bit more about.
Yeah, the programs are in different phases right now. PedPDX is being updated, and there'll be project lists that comes out of those. So as the data becomes available, we'll make those different programs selectable.
For example, here we have the bikeway network completion and the neighborhood greenways plans for this neighborhood. We also have the street classifications, so we can see the bicycle, transit, or design classifications. And then we can cross-reference these across each other by saying, let's look at the bicycle plan versus the neighborhood greenways. So they're composable. We also have a selection of reference layers, for example, zoning codes and project plan centers and corridors.
Can I ask you, which map are you using? I've noticed there's some subtle differences in different maps that you can access, Portland map, Google map, actually some surprising differences when
Absolutely.
You drill down. What are you using on this?
The base map that we're putting this data upon, I believe, is the base map provided by the portlandmaps.com. I believe that is the case. If it's not, we're using a standard base map issued by Esri, the GIS service provider. I'm pretty sure we're using the Portland Maps one, though. And as for the geographic data, we are rendering all of these plans from the Portland Bureau of Transportation's own GIS.
Thank you.
Okay. We just want to give you a quick preview of that. Thank you both. Okay, so the next steps, I think Bob's going to get us there, but I'll go ahead and go. So today we have our council hearing on April 11th. If council needs to any deliberations related to TSP, that would be on April 11th. On May 9th, we would have any council amendments or substitutions, again, if needed or proposed. On May 24th, we'd have a final reading and vote. And on then we'd have an effective date of June 25th. If there are no changes or deliberations needed, you could propose to have a first reading today and then your second and final reading on May 24th. So again, the requested council action to just refresh your memory for all the things we just talked about. And then I just wanted to acknowledge the TSP team that's been working on this, some of us for a long time, some of us just joined the team this week. So some of them are here today, again, if they have questions, but everyone's worked really hard to make this a great document, and we again will continue to work on it as we move through any amendments and then through the final document in this summer. So we're open to questions. I also wanted to just make sure Chris Smith from the Planning and Sustainability Commission is here to testify. I think he got signed up second rather than first, but he's here on behalf of the Planning Commission. And again, we have staff here to answer any questions you may have.
Chris, for the record, as the city attorney was reading that statement of admonishment, I think you were the only member of the public in the room at the time, so I hope you don't take offense at that.
So before Chris speaks, I'd like to pass out my amendment.
Okay.
So these are hastily prepared amendments, and I'm glad to hear that we might get another shot at it in a couple of weeks. But this is in Section 8 of the plan, the recommended plan that we've been given, which is on connected and autonomous vehicles. It might be helpful to turn to that because I didn't have time to write out what else is there. So it's 8.1. Unfortunately, the document is it's in sections rather than with numbers. So if you
we're getting there.
Yeah. So if you turn to page 8.1 of your document. So I share Commissioner Fisher's concerns. In fact, Commissioner, I've pretty much made a very... Well, I would like to say it was a similar speech. Since it was the end of last Wednesday, I was a bit fried, so I would say it was more of a rant than your very careful and measured speech with concerns about autonomous vehicles. There was a discussion at the Metro Policy Advisory Commission committee meeting that I was frankly appalled by, because there was the kind of gleeful assumption that everybody would be using autonomous vehicles, where previously we've been trying to get folks, especially in some of the outlying jurisdictions, onto transit and indeed to provide transit. So I'm very concerned that Metro's jurisdictions are going to embrace automated vehicles and therefore adding a huge number of single vehicles. We know that there were 9 million Uber and Lyft trips last year in Portland, which is a huge number, and it's no wonder that transit is going down. So knowing the challenges that we have had with the transportation network companies, I want to make sure that we have policies in place that make sure that we don't make the same mistakes. So for policy 9X, capital A, lowercase a, which states in the draft, ensure all levels of autonomous of automated vehicles advance Vision Zero by operating safely for all users, especially for vulnerable road users. I will add a second sentence, ensure adequate insurance coverage for operators, customers, and the public at large by providers of autonomous vehicles. And I would also state, just in reference to the discussion on the tragedy in Arizona, that vehicle was speeding. And so I would like to see a policy that that automated vehicles are not allowed to speed, that they are set for the speed limit maximum. But that's, I think, included in the first sentence. The second addition would be in the following policy, which is in this, it's 9X, capital A, lowercase b, about ensure that connected and automated vehicles improve travel time reliability and system efficiency. There are set three existing policies, and I would like to add supporting and encouraging use of public transportation. It was explained to me by the Metro Planner that they are hoping that they could use autonomous vehicles to get people from their home to the transit station or bus stop rather than all the way in a single occupancy vehicle from point A to point B. And so if these kinds of technologies are going to be used to augment and support the public transit system, that's a good thing. If they're going to compete with it, that's a bad thing. And I think we need to state that very clearly in the policy. And then my final correction for right now is on the next page, under policy X9, capital A, lowercase d, which is make the benefits of automated mobility available on an equitable basis. Long sentence that continues, and then I would like to add, this includes people with disabilities as well as communities of color, women, and geographically underserved communities. I think we could also actually add non-English speaking people, that we want to make sure that we know that people have not shared equally in the transportation network companies, because there's a lot of people who can't afford to use them, and they haven't helped with transit provision or anything else that would make the whole system more equitable. So those are three of the things that I think are the most urgent for us to add to this policy.
Are you offering this as a package?
Yes.
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz moves amendments to Section 8 under connected and autonomous vehicles per the document we all have, and Commissioner Fish seconds the package.
That's on the table, so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Smith, and what I'm sure is a pleasant change of pace for all of us, I am not going to harangue you about freeways today. I am here in my capacity as Vice Chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission to convey the PSC recommendation. We've had the opportunity to journey through all three stages of the TSP with Courtney and the PBOT team, and I'd like to thank the staff for that whole process. It's been great from my point of view and appreciate their support through the process. Let me say, first of all, that the PSC endorses TSP Stage 3 and encourages you to adopt it. I want to spend a minute talking about AVs and some other next steps that the PSC would urge Council and PBOT to take. AVs are an interesting opportunity and challenge at the same time. As you've heard, there's the potential that AVs increase the amount of vehicle miles traveled in Portland. On the other hand, we think it could significantly reduce parking demand, which would be a good thing. And also, at the end point of the revolution, and obviously we are on a path, they should be much safer than human drivers. I mean, yes, there was a tragedy in Tempe, but shouldn't distract from the fact that human drivers killed 50 Portlanders on our streets last year. There is a point where AVs should be much safer, and I look forward to that endpoint. Now, we may not be there yet. The statistical evidence has multiple interpretations. But I think the bigger policy challenge that we face is what kind of AV future we have. Mayor, you helped kick off the Urbanism Next conference last week, which I attended. Very much a painting of two pictures there, a heaven and a hell for AVs, and I believe the policy that PBOT has included in TSP Stage 3 is very much pushing us towards the heaven scenario, but it will take some heavy lifting to get there. I mean, the worst case you could imagine is a privately owned AV that follows you around through the day, and every time you get out to do something, just circles waiting to pick you up again, right? That would be horrendous. The PBOT policy wisely points towards shared fleets, so there will be AVs out there that we all share and use rather than owning them individually. But it will take, I'm sure, inducements from government to get us down that path. I think you should also be careful that it might be tempting to say we won't let AVs operate on the streets of Portland until some set of criteria are met, but you should probably be prepared for the possibility that the federal or state government will preempt that choice from you, and having policy that we can sustain and enforce to back that up would be an important thing. A couple of other points. I want to echo what Commissioner Fritsch said, because we made a recommendation that the city should, in fact, through leadership, demonstrate how to be an employer that supports telecommuting. I have been on that journey myself for as long as I've lived in the city. My employer has been in Wilsonville, and for many years I reverse commuted down to Wilsonville. And in 2000, I became a part-time telecommuter, and since then the curve has slowly increased until last year I finally gave up my desk in Wilsonville and work entirely from my home in Portland. It's eminently possible in today's technology environment to do that and still be an effective member of a team, and I think the city should be out in front showing other employers how to make that happen. I think we can have a much greater than 10% work from home share, and we should aspire to do that, and the city should be out leading the charge. The PSC made two other specific recommendations for follow-on actions. One is to take that mode share chart that PBOT displayed and actually turn that into an action plan and have PBOT seek resources and make plans to cause those modal shifts to change, including setting five and 10 year interim goals, not just a goal out in 2035, but to say what the steps are along the way that we will get there. I think if we are not very intentional about this, congestion will continue to be a big challenge for Portland, and we're going to have to marshal our resources to stay ahead of that challenge. The other specific recommendation the PSC made was for the city to develop its own transit plan for the city. And this is not intended in any way to be a replacement for the good work that TriMet does, but rather an assistance to that. We've already started in this direction with things like the Enhanced Transit Corridors program. We can work best in partnership with TriMet when we understand our needs the most, and transit is a sufficiently important part of our mobility future that we should have a very well-articulated set of goals for the city, and our own transit plan would go a long way towards doing that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I have a question. You uh-huh. came all the way, so thanks for joining us. Last time I was in D.C., Chris, the lead story in the Washington Post was that there was a bipartisan effort to consider preemption. Uh-huh. And what was interesting when I read it was that the Democrats were even more enthusiastic than the Republicans because of their connections to Silicon Valley and the uh-huh. idea of technology. So I think it's very helpful for you to signal that that could be coming down, I won't say down the road. I want to ask your opinion on something, though. I've watched the film Sully about 10 times, and my takeaway from that film is that all the advances in technology in the cockpit of an airplane plus an experienced pilot gives us even a greater chance of having safety, that the combination is a winning combination. And in that film, at least the moral of that film is, if you took Sully out of the cockpit, the plane would have crashed because the technology would have made a couple of assumptions that turned out not to be true when they did the flight simulation. So if what we want is safety as a paramount virtue, why not require in autonomous vehicles that there still be an operator? Isn't that getting the best of both worlds?
So I'm thinking about all the market forces that will militate against that. And I think there's also, you know, what an autonomous vehicle does is give you your time back, right? You are no longer spending your time looking out the windshield, making sure you don't hit a pedestrian. You're checking your email or you're doing work. So, you know, the people who travel will want to take advantage of that time. So that's the countervailing force, right? And I think it's an extraordinarily powerful one. And I think you potentially get the best of both worlds. Sully doesn't have to be in the cockpit. He could be at a joystick 1,000 miles away connected by the internet to that plane and perhaps provide the same judgment, right? And I think we will see with level 4 AVs, there will probably be human remote operators that can intervene in certain situations. So the technology is going to evolve in a lot of ways, but I am way more confident of a robot with great infrared vision seeing me on a dark street at night on my bicycle than I am of a human operator seeing me in that same situation, or even to be able to detect the Bluetooth ping from my cell phone, which no human operator will ever perceive. So there's a lot of opportunity to introduce safety technology. Sure, a human is a backup, probably always a plus, although the thing that scares me the most about the level 3 testing, which is the stage we're in now, where a human operator is supposed to be able to intervene when needed, is the ability of a human to react and take over control fast enough to have a meaningful impact. And I think, you know, that will be a question in the Tempe situation. So,
and the let me ask you a follow-up question. One of the issues that you constantly raise to us is about equity and how we distribute our resources. What do we know about the cost that the city would have to incur in order for the grid to be smart enough to accommodate AV? And does that work against some of our equity goals in terms of providing transportation infrastructure for parts of the city that lag?
So there are probably people in Peabody who can answer that better than I can, but I will say, you know, for my part, it is not yet clear to me where the city's value add will be in terms of vehicle-to-vehicle communications or vehicle-to-wayside communications, whether that whole set of functionality can be provided over the cellular networks, in which case it may be the private entities that bear most of the cost, and the city might be a data provider to a network. Whether or not we'll actually install wayside infrastructure for this or not is not clear to me. There are probably people in PBOT who have a better opinion or more informed opinion than I do. What I would say is that as we regulate, and we clearly will regulate, and you know, to be forthright, pricing will be a big part of that regulation, there will be revenue and expense streams that we ought to carefully tailor to advance our equity goals.
That's helpful. Thank you.
I just want to add that there are some of us who can't read while driving or in the car that get motion sick. And I think that if you took a survey of people and asked whether they'd prefer to be the driver or the passenger, there's a lot of Americans who would much prefer to be the driver. So that has to be factored into how this is or isn't useful.
There. Well, and it will be a long time before we outlaw human drivers. And the system is going to have to be smart enough to accommodate human drivers mixed with automated vehicles, which has its own challenges. So things like platooning, where three automated vehicles can be a foot apart and use less room on the freeway, you know, will be interrupted by the human drivers who are still out there, and we have to figure all that out.
The future.
Indeed.
We're living it.
All right. Does that complete your...
That completes us, yes.
Okay, and Sue, is that all the people we had signed up?
We have one... Other speaker?
Very good.
Terry Parker, please come up.
Yes, Mr. Parker, come on up, please.
Terry Parker, Northeast Portland. I really haven't had a chance to say anything about this transportation service system plan to the council. Transportation system plan is a mirror image of the turbulence and upheaval created by the Trump administration. The car-hater mindset in which it was conceived generates bitterness, hostility, and aggression between the various transport mode users. You only need to look at the clash over Lincoln Street in Southeast Portland to get a picture of the animosity. The city has a PBOT self-inflicted congestion problem. Road diets create more congestion, which in turn adds to fuel consumption and emissions. Enhanced transit corridor options that take away through travel lanes or add curb extensions will do the same. This TSP will only make congestion worse, causing even more confrontations. It doesn't make sense to create a target for congestion and then create more of it. Build more housing. More people move in and come with their cars. With self-driving cars on the horizon and transport options like Lyft and Uber already here, universal transit service may very well become an expensive dinosaur. Younger generations who traditionally ride bicycles and now want to raise their families are transitioning to cars and SUVs. Additional motor vehicle capacity is needed, not less. This must include fixing I-5 at the Rose Quarter, but without tolls. Instead of sanctioning environmental mafia tactics, extorting motorists, and attempting to dictate mode choice, possibly even discriminating as it applies to income, the city needs to establish equity by requiring alternative mode users, including freeloading bicyclists, to pay their fair share for the specific and specialized bicycle infrastructure they utilize. Modes at the top of the privilege hierarchy need to pay more than those at the bottom. Additionally, if the city expects people to transition from petroleum-powered vehicles to electric vehicles, the city needs to require adequate off-street parking for all new residential development that includes adjacent electric connectivity for overnight charging. This is far better than running extension cords across sidewalks or down the block to cars stored on the street. Finally, the political leadership here and elsewhere needs to start talking about the real issue associated with both the creation of congestion and maintaining the sustainability of the planet, that being continued population growth. The TSP needs some changes that reflects a reality that cars are not going away. And two additional things, any SOV targets must also apply to the city's fleet of cars, which are almost exclusively used as SOV vehicles. And I can't read what my other thought was. I apologize. I had another thought about automated vehicles, but I wrote it so anyway, thank you.
Yeah, and Terry, we have your written testimony as well here, so thank you. Thanks for coming.
I think that's a really interesting point about electric vehicles and having to have somewhere for them to recharge if we want to encourage that.
I think so, but if you're not going to supply parking, where are they going to recharge them? You know, I mean, they need a place to plug them in, and so you need a parking space for at least most residences.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that's it.
Very good. And that concludes both 284 and 285 as far as your presentation. Yeah. Colleagues, any further questions?
This is the first time in recorded history that someone has asked for a 1 hour for an item that's as complicated as this. And by my watch and the clock, we have just come in under 1 hour. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's excellent. An inspiration for the rest of us.
Okay, thanks.
Indeed it is. So item number 284, this is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. I'm sorry. We need to actually vote on Commissioner Fritz's amendments first.
Or what I was going to propose is if we could have that conversation at the April 11th deliberations, because I think we would like to...
Okay.
Read them and just make sure we understand them and where they would go and have conversations.
There may well be some refinement that you
right,
would like to
right.
suggest.
Right, and then that's why we had the April 11th time set aside.
Okay, and those are for the amendments to 285 or to 284?
The ordinance, which is 284.
Okay,
but we would like to keep it as a package.
So what we will do then is we'll move it to second reading.
Yeah.
And we'll keep the amendments open and we'll have the opportunity to vote on the amendments at the second reading. Does that work for you, Commissioner
Fritz?
Yeah.
Very good.
So done.
Thank you.
With regard to 285, that is a resolution.
I think you said you want it as a package.
We'd like to keep them together.
You want to keep them both together?
Please.
Okay. We will continue then item number 285, and they'll remain joint.
Can you remind the date and time certain that you're continuing it to?
We're April 11th, and I don't know the time certain.
And that time is 3:30 p.m.
Thank you.
April 11th. 3:30, Portland City Hall. Be there.
And I don't know if we need to say it, but I believe that written testimony is open until 5 o'clock on Friday.
This Friday?
Yeah, the 23rd.
Very good.
Yeah.
So written testimony will remain open until this Friday, which is March 23rd.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay, thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you.
All right, next item, please, 286 and 287. Please read those together.